You must milk this kitty. Radio Drone. It's a very somber Thursday night. I am Josh Hadley. With me, as always, is Cecil T. Robot.
Yeah. It's very depressing. It's very sad.
Peter?
If I could whistle, I would do a nice, somber Ennio Morricone type song, but I can't whistle.
Well, the reason we're a little somber is we're going to be talking about movie scores tonight, which is precipitated by the death this week of James Horner. Before that, I don't have any clever segue this week. Just go to adamandeve.com, use the promo code DROME, and you get 10 free gifts on top of whatever you order. You get 6 free DVDs, a free mystery gift, a gift for him, a gift for her, and free U.S. shipping for using the promo code DROME at adamandeve.com. Tonight, we're going to be talking about music scores. Like I said, this is James Horner, who has created some of the most iconic music scores that there are. He died in a plane crash this week. So we're going to be looking at not just his work, but just how important his work was to movies. What is the score that immediately jumps out to you as the most epic that just makes the movie for you?
I would have to go with, and it would be just because it was, I remember being so young the first time I heard them, Danny Elfman's Batman score and John Williams' Superman theme, you know, because I saw those movies so young, and the Batman cartoon I would just watch endlessly. They're not my favorites, but just so memorable because they're so ingrained into my mind from knowing about them for so long.
It's probably what's going through my head right now is the Raiders of the Lost Ark theme. That just gets you so pumped up. Just hearing that, oh, it's so good. So that takes a good movie and elevates it to just a whole other level.
I have two that I kind of deal with. One is by James Horner, which would be the Aliens score. Also, Basil Polidorus's the opening to Conan the Barbarian.
Yes.
That is almost the definition of an epic intro. The Alien score, it was actually so epic that James Horner technically scored movies he never worked on. That Alien score has been used in the trailers and commercial music in over 70 different items.
Bishop's Countdown, right? I believe that's the track. It was used in like dozens, hundreds of 90s action movie trailers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and sometimes that happens. For instance, go back and listen to the original RoboCop trailer that uses the score from Terminator on it.
Yep.
Because Basil Poledouris had not done his RoboCop score yet. Well, yeah. Throw the Terminator score in there. It's about robots, right?
RoboCop score is just so memorable. But, I mean, if it wasn't written yet, then it makes sense.
Well, you bring up RoboCop. That's actually a really good instance of diversion. What we think of as the classic RoboCop score. Doesn't appear until about 25 minutes into the movie. It's actually a track called Rock Shop, because Paul Verhoeven specifically asked Basil Poledouris not to create a title card score, but he wanted a RoboCop theme for when we're getting into how RoboCop comes into creation. So that iconic da-na-na-na, that doesn't come till 20 minutes into the movie, and I think a lot of people forget that.
It's great. That's a really great way of building it up, because it does. The score builds up as the movie goes along. You get like kind of a light, a sort of sci-fi, synthy twinkling throughout the film. You get some like epic scores, but it's all building up to that main theme.
It makes sense, because they wouldn't start the film with that, because why do the RoboCop theme? He's not RoboCop yet. It may, you know, I mean, even though it's not called the RoboCop theme, it pretty much is the RoboCop theme, because it just swells and booms like as he's, you know, as he's getting into it. And it's just so kick-ass.
Well, with James, what are some of your favorite James Horner scores? I have to go with Aliens, as I already said, Battle Beyond the Stars, back when he worked with Roger Corman. And that theme, Roger Corman's used that in a dozen different films too. But that theme almost defines space opera just besides Star Wars, as far as I'm concerned. I don't care if I'm perceived as a fag for this. His Titanic score was amazing. He deserved the That's Oscar true. For his score for Titanic.
Not a fan of Titanic myself, but the music in it was great.
My favorite, it's tough, because I have a lot that I really, how about just a bunch that I really enjoy? I don't know which one would technically be my favorite. Krull, Wrath of Khan, Aliens is just amazing. Like you said, the Titanic theme is just freaking memorable, because it repeats so many times throughout the movie. And for, you know, a 3-hour movie to have that recurring theme song and you don't get sick of it, just, you know, is a testament to how strong it is and how it's done in different ways. You know, sometimes it's done with like a full orchestra, other times it's done much more, you know, scaled down. And let's see. Commando is another one.
Yes.
Commando kicks ass. Commando is such a good score. So yeah, he's done some really amazing stuff.
Well, how important is the score, do you think, to a movie? Not necessarily to you, but to the success of a movie. Do you think a great movie with a bad or okay score can still be a good movie? Or on the opposite side, a movie that's not very good, but you go, damn, the music is fantastic. How important is the score to the success? And I don't mean that financially. I mean to the movie working, to a film.
Before I get into the how important I see a score being for a movie, I would like to list off my favorite James Horner soundtracks, which to me, I really love the, as Cecil was talking about, Commando score, and I do love Rathcon, I love Aliens, but I really do love his more action-based synthy scores, like in 48 Hours, in Commando, his use of the steel drum with the synth is just kick-ass. Is having music that really fits with what you're seeing. In a score like Mando's score, you've got this synthy, action-based, you know, quickly paced kind of music that really fits with, you know, watching Arnold kick ass. And then you've got the more big, booming, orchestral, epic scores for stuff like Aliens, for stuff like Titanic, definitely for RoboCop. Like, you know, Basil Poledaris' score for RoboCop is just amazing, and it fits so well with that film, and you really couldn't picture anything else in that movie, because it's what we were talking about, the way it would build up and how the theme would show up 20 minutes into it. And then you've got this, you know, RoboCop's main theme that would begin to show up more and more, the more he gets into being what he is. I think it's definitely important. Brandon was talking about one of the movies that he was talking about of the Jaws knockoffs, how the music just didn't fit whatsoever with it. It was like this random smooth jazz, funky kind of stuff. That really is important. You can't just throw in any music and expect it to fit context of what you're seeing. Like, could you really picture? And the example I'm going to make is somebody's like sort of, you know, what if Game of Thrones was in the 80s, like the, you know, soft focus VHS, like the way people kind of perceive the 80s is that everything was synthy and they did that Game of Thrones. If it was in the 80s, like on VHS or on, you know, cable with a VHS rip and it has this like synthy version of the theme. Well, I personally could not picture, say, Conan the Barbarian without Basil Poledaris's theme. Like, I can't picture Conan using this like goofy synthy music that would belong in a sci-fi film. So it is important. It's important with the context of the film, what kind of film it is, brings it to a level of epic.
If the movie is good and the score is so-so, then it doesn't ruin the movie for me, but it does kind of take it down a little bit. Like, it's like, it was almost awesome, but instead it's just like really good. And God forbid if the score is just bad. Now, this is an example. This is not a good movie, but here's a case of taking something that is a mediocre movie, having the wrong music and making it worse. The remake of RoboCop that came out last year, I believe, there's a big shootout in early on in the film.
Oh, are you talking about where they play Hocus Pocus by Focus? A weird cover version?
Focus. Ugh. Yeah.
I like that song, by the way. It's just totally inappropriate for that movie.
It is the complete wrong song for that moment. It doesn't work at all. And it makes a bad... like. The scene might have worked if maybe it was just, you know, some random orchestral, you know, thing, some, you know, or some nice, even like a kind of a rock tune, you know, kind of, you know, he's jumping in and out between like pillars and shooting the cops. But with Hocus Pocus by Focus, like you said, I like the song. I don't dislike it, but it is absolutely the wrong song for that, and consequently it makes what could have been an okay scene just terrible and stupid. So there are a lot of movies, so that's a case of taking a something that's mediocre and dropping it down a level. But with some movies, I know I've seen some movies that have had like mediocre scores, but that's the thing, you don't remember those. Like, you remember Jaws, you remember Jurassic Park, you remember the movie, and then you also remember the music that went along with it. But if there's a really good movie and it's just kind of got like a mediocre score or just kind of a generic rock soundtrack, you usually don't remember that. And that kind of also factors into making the film bigger, because then it's a whole thing. It's like it's a visual and an audio.
Because the example I had was Lady Hawk. Lady Hawk is a fantasy film set in a sword and sorcery type film. And you've got wizards and curses and knights. And the entire score is a synth pop from the mid-80s. It is so brutally inappropriate for the movie that you're watching Lady Hawk became famous for how bad its score was. Right movie, but what the fuck were you thinking with that score?
I think it's a good movie. Well, I haven't seen it in a long time, but I just thought it was a really good movie. And it's funny you mention the score. I'm thinking back to it, and all I can remember is the movie itself. I can't remember the score. So. And that's funny. I want to go back and watch it and just laugh at...
Sometimes a rock song, like you pointed out, Cecil, in RoboCop. Django Unchained. I'm enjoying the movie for the most part. Then they get to the rap song in the middle of a late 1800s Western. And I just went, what the hell was that?
That was Jamie Foxx trying to get his creative freedoms into the film.
Yuck.
But it was so inappropriate that that literally just took me out of the film. Same. Why am I watching a cowboy movie with rap music? That was, you know, sometimes the song placement is very, very important. And then there are other times where you have movies where the soundtrack's all you remember. Now, I'm not saying this in a distinctly negative way, but go back and watch like the Albert Pune movies, Vicious Lips or Radioactive Dreams. They're both fine movies. I like both movies quite a bit. What I take away from both of them is the amazing score by Sue Sadd. Her songs are the best part of that movie. They are so far above these movies that I like that I've actually sought out the rare Sue Sadd singles from that film because neither film had a soundtrack released. And it's kind of rare when you go, you know what? The rock music in this song is, or in this movie, is better than the goddamn movie. You don't encounter that that often, do you?
When you do, it's pretty great because at least there's something that's memorable about the film. I can't think of an example where I heard a song where I took it away as something that was more memorable than the movie itself. Introduced me to a lot of metal bands I'd never heard of, so that's something.
I think that I would say yes with Vicious Lips because the soundtrack in that is just so awesome. And the movie is good. It's silly, but it's not one of Pune's best.
I can listen to the Sue Sadd song Lunar Madness on a goddamn loop. I love that song so much, you know?
Yeah, I can't think of any movies where the sound. I mean, there are a lot of movies I like where the movie's good and the soundtrack's good, but unfortunately, I'm drawing a blank with movies where the soundtrack is great, but the movie's bad.
I just remembered which one is one that I took away more from the soundtrack than I did from the movie. I hated Hobo with a Shotgun, but I loved Power Glove's soundtrack.
Oh, how did you hate Hobo with a Shotgun?
Well, that's a different topic.
I didn't like it, but I thought the music, I thought it had a cool visual element to it, and I loved Rutger Hauer, but nothing else really sat right with me. But that soundtrack by Power Glove, I can listen to all day.
Well, and the soundtrack is so important to a film that, I mean, film nerds, the real hardcore ones, I think like us, who have gone out of our way to see work prints and things, it's strange how different a movie can be without the soundtrack. For instance, I've got a couple of Deep Space Nine and Battlestar Galactica episodes that are work prints. They've got all the sound effects, all the visual effects, but no music. And you wouldn't believe how poor these scenes work without the score underneath them. I got a Battlestar Galactica that has a temp song the first appearance of the Pegasus in Battlestar Galactica, I've got a work print that has a different soundtrack that's very different than, it's much more of like a Michael Bay soundtrack than it is the normal Battlestar Galactica soundtrack, and it absolutely changes the tone of the scene. The score is so important that it can set a tone that just changing the background music completely changes the scene.
Was it Spider-Man 3 where Tim Burton had like the temporary score in place? Was it John Williams?
What would Tim Burton have had to do with Spider-Man 3?
Did I say Tim Burton?
Oh, you said God, Tim Burton.
I meant Sam Raimi.
Okay, that makes a little more sense.
But my brain is elsewhere this evening. When Sam Raimi had the score in place, I believe it was Spider-Man 3, and he ended up, there was somebody else who was writing the score for it. He ended up liking the temporary score and basically told whoever was writing the, or was it Danny Elfman that was writing the score for it? And then he basically, like, he said he'd never work with him again.
That is kind of a dick move to do.
A major dick move to do. It just kind of goes to show, like, where his head is anymore. You know, he's another one who, you know, with Beetlejuice and Pee-wee's Big Adventure, just so many, like, awesome scores, and then to dick him over like that.
Sometimes just changing out the rock song. Sometimes it's done, you know, for legal reasons nowadays, for licensing. Have either of you seen the Return of the Living Dead work print versus the theatrical cut?
I haven't.
Well, you guys know how perfectly Tonight We'll Make Love Till We Die by SSQ works when Trash is taking off her clothes and dancing on the tombstone, right?
That scene is burned in my brain.
Yeah, I'm sure for two reasons. That scene in the work print I have is set to Vanity's Nasty Girl.
Oh.
And maybe that would have worked if I'd seen the Nasty Girl version first. But knowing Tonight We'll Make Love Till We Die, I just go, wow, Nasty Girl so doesn't work here. You know, so sometimes just swapping a song out can make a major, major difference in how a scene works, which comes down to the licensing nonsense that so many DVD releases have to deal with.
Yeah.
But now let's talk about composers. Do you think a composer in general has a certain style? Like when you hear a James Horner score, can you go, that sounds like James Horner? Because there's a few composers that I think can do that. Like John Carpenter, he sounds like John Carpenter.
Yeah.
I think Richard Band sounds like Richard Band. Mm-hmm. Just Elmer Bernstein sounds so much like Elmer Bernstein that when I was watching for It Came From Beyond Midnight, the 1989 movie Slipstream, I didn't even pay attention to the credits. I didn't know Elmer Bernstein did the soundtrack. And I'm listening to the score and I'm going, why does this movie remind me of the movies Heavy Metal and Ghostbusters? Both also by Elmer Bernstein. And it's just like his style from the Heavy Metal score and the Ghostbusters score was so prevalent in Slipstream that it started to distract me because I kept thinking about Ghostbusters and Heavy Metal. Mm-hmm. So do you think there are composers out there where you know who they are just from sound? You don't need to read the credits to know who did the score?
Absolutely. And sometimes it's because they will begin to maybe rip themselves off a bit. Or in James Horner's case, I believe it was for Aliens. He didn't really have a lot of time, so he borrowed a lot of stuff from Wrath of Khan, but still ended up making something awesome. But yeah, he's always got certain elements. Like he's known for the da-da-da-da-da-da like kind of sound. A lot of that will show up in a lot of his scores. Hans Zimmer has the dan-dan-dan-dan-dan-dan-dan-dan-dan that shows up in almost every score.
The Hans Zimmer stuff is much more upbeat.
Yeah, he's got this very, like, heroic kind of sound to his scores. And he's like, from his work going back to like Black Rain, Backdraft, The Rock, Gladiator, I love his work. And I think it really, really stands out nice. And he is easily one of those guys where you hear a movie that has his music playing, you don't have to see the credits, you know it's Hans Zimmer. Or if you're watching a Lucio Fulci flick, it's pretty easy to pinpoint that it's Fabio Frizzi doing something. Or if you're watching
Argento, you know it's Goblin.
Or Argento, you know it's either Goblin or just Claudio Simonetti doing some solo work. You know with John Carpenter, it's either him or Alan Howarth busting an awesome score. The Steven Seagal early 90s movies, David Michael Frank's scores in those movies, or his music from Best of the Best 2, or Alan Silvestri, you absolutely know that that's him in Predator or Back to the Future. He's another guy that's got like a certain element that you can hear no matter what score you're hearing. There's something that you'll hear that will indicate it's him. Like his scores for Predator 2 and Judgment Night are very similar, but it's a good kind of thing where it's like they're not necessarily ripping themselves off. There's an element where you know it's them and they're putting their mark on the score, and you get excited when you know that it's them because, hey, you know, he did the music he did for that last movie I saw was awesome. So, you know, this one's going to be awesome too.
The two that always come to mind for me, it's John Williams and John Carpenter. Like you hear them, and within 10 seconds, you immediately know who it is, because John Williams has those scores that just build, and you know it usually starts off with like a low bass and kind of da-da-da-da, and so you immediately know, okay, well that's him. Mm-hmm. Or it comes out just thunderous booms, and John Carpenter just has those amazing synth scores.
Yeah.
That always resonate. They just immediately, you're like, oh, this is so kick-ass. Like sometimes you don't even want to watch the movie, you want to just listen to the music.
Not even like Escape from New York or anything. They Live.
Yeah.
No. Mm-hmm. It had almost like this synthy old west kind of style to what,
yeah,
what They Live,
which is
right
what
had.
He was going for.
Yeah.
Very bluesy. That very you know, just so kick ass.
With that said, do you think that scores in general evoke a certain, maybe when they're made, maybe not even like the style of movie that they are, but when they're made? Like you can hear a score and you might not know what movie it's from right away, and you go, that was mid 70s. Or holy crap, that was 1988. That as soon as you hear something like Franco Micheletti's score for The Visitor, you go, holy crap, that's 1979. That the scores are kind of tied to the time period when they're made, or maybe when the movie is made? Or do you think that is something that they intentionally do, that this movie is made in 79, I want it to sound like 79?
Depends, because you know, there are some movies that are made in 1979, but they're fantasy films or they're superhero films, so they've got soundtracks or scores that are timeless. And then you have other ones that are set in, you know, 1985, and they have a score or soundtrack that is kind of grounded in what is popular at the time. For example, with Spider-Man, the first one, the score is very good, but then they did things like add Macy Gray into the soundtrack, and that immediately dates the film. Because it's like, okay, well, that's somebody who was really popular for 5 minutes when they were filming.
I have a better one for that. Dan Aykroyd's Nothing But Trouble, the Humpty Dance guy, is in the movie and does
right.
the song. Remember that? You're like, did you really think that was going to be like some timeless piece of music, Dan?
Oh my God. Well, I mean, he did rap with Tom Hanks and Dragnet. That's another thing.
It's a city of crime.
I think if you are if there's a movie from like the mid 80s, maybe early 90s, and you're a couple of white guys that shouldn't be rapping but are rapping, then yeah, that absolutely positively dates the film.
I hear she liked the song City of Crime quite a bit, really.
Oh, I didn't say that it was bad. It's just, it's so bad that it, you know, not to do the whole invoking the thing, but it's so bad that it turned around and became good. Because it's so ludicrous.
It's so white guy rap, really.
It's so white guy rap. Well, you have Dan Aykroyd doing the voice, you know, that very monotone.
Well, he's doing the Joe Friday.
He's doing the Joe Friday, and then you have Tom Hanks really trying to sell it. You know, you better make it on the double. You know?
Honestly, when you watch that video, Tom Hanks really looks like he's having fun, though.
He looks like he's having a lot of fun.
This is the city. It's a city of crime. My name is Friday. I carry a badge. 3:15 a.m., Thursday, January 15th. It was chilly that morning in the City of Angels. On this particular occasion, we happen to witness a pagan ritual in progress. See that stream act? We're just in time. We have stumbled into a major crime.
They got the girl all right. Now that's not nice. I think she is the subject of a sacrifice.
Buddy, we're putting this party on ice.
But first, you know, we really ought to read them their rights.
Read them their rights. Read them their rights.
Well, I'm here tonight to rap about your rights. Cause right now you're in trouble. Don't have to say nothing at all. Y'all got two calls and you better make them on the double. This is the city of crime. Don't step in line. This is the city of crime. You better be free to enjoy this time.
You're a dangerous mob.
And you also got to consider, at the time, Dan Aykroyd was the name. Like, Tom Hanks was still kind
of
the
bosom. Tom Hanks was the rising star.
It dates a movie depending on the composer. Because I think when you look at movies that, like, Basil Poledouris, Hans Zimmer, Alan Silvestri, guys like that have done the scores for, a lot of their scores then sound a lot like scores that they would do later on. Like the Starship Troopers score, for instance, isn't that much different in like time period quality or whatever as something like RoboCop or Conan. It has that same sort of orchestral booming quality. He's a guy who, much like Basil Poledouris, was making a lot of stuff. It could resonate into today's scores very as well. Like, I think the Aliens score easily stands the test of time. Same Wrath of Khan. Even like Willow, even Wolfen, all those really stand the test of time. But like 48 Hours and Commando are, this is an 80s movie. What was another, like a really good example are like a Claudio Simonetti or, you know, John Carpenter's 80s scores. You know that these are from 80s movies. Like, say, if you listen to the Drive soundtrack and you don't know who did it and you hear like Cliff Martinez's Tick of the Clock, I think he did. It's a very, almost a very reminiscent of like Tangerine Dream score in Thief. And then you realize it's from a movie from 2011. It's like, well, that fooled me, because you wouldn't figure that a movie with such a synth heavy score would be a recent thing. So it does date it in a way, but at the same time, I think a lot of modern filmmakers and modern composers are kind of going back to that 80s synth style and sort of bringing it back.
You mentioned some of the scores. What about when a certain musician, not a composer, but a band, does a score for a movie? I don't mean loaning a rock song, like Toto with Dune or Queen with Flash Gordon. Is that usually immediately apparent? Like, when you hear the Dune score... When you just hear the score, the underscore to say the battle to take Rocket Ajax in Flash Gordon, does that strike you as Queen right away?
With Flash Gordon and Queen, it's absolutely Queen. Like, there's no denying it. Yeah. I mean, it immediately sounds like Queen. It's not like sometimes when you have a band that'll do a soundtrack or a score for a movie, and they kind of do it a little bit differently. Like Trent Reznor's done some scores and whatnot, and it's had his touch to it, but it's not immediately identifiable as a Trent Reznor song. Same thing with Marilyn Manson. I was kind of impressed with some of the stuff that he's done, because I'm not a fan of Marilyn Manson, but I thought that his scores were actually kind of cool. But yeah. When you get a band like, you know, Fastway or something that does the soundtrack for Trick or Treat, that's really cool. And, you know, it sounds like, well, at the time, I didn't know who Fastway was. I since knew who they were. But at the time, I was like, oh, this is a cool rock. Right. As far as Toto for Dune, no. That one does not immediately make you think of Toto, because Toto, you think Africa, yeah. You know, you don't think that, you know, that cool but kind of weird score that we got for Dune. Mm-hmm. And an odd choice, too. But then again, Dune is just an odd movie. Good movie, but Dune, an odd movie.
But I like Toto was not the first choice. The first choice was Pink Floyd.
Mm. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, God. Flash Gordon. Yeah, that's obvious. You can tell that's Queen. Just by it sounds. It doesn't need Freddie Mercury's voice for you to know that that's Queen. For Toto, though, you can't hear Toto in the Dune score at all. Like, to me, Dune may not be one of the greatest movies ever, but I consider that to be one of the greatest scores ever for a sci-fi fantasy film. That's one that I really think stands the test of time. I would like to hear more music like that in movies like that. I think that's definitely one of those movies where I think a lot of people will remember the score a lot more than they remember the movie, besides a few hilarious lines from Sting. I will kill him.
You must milk this kitty.
But I think, it's so weird with that. And I really it's a testament to Toto, I think, being some, because they were obviously the sort of poppy 80s, the guys you would hear on the radio with songs like Africa and stuff like that. But they could really churn out a damn good score, too. And I think that's really, really surprising. Like, they easily could have done some legit movie music, because the Dune score, while I mean it's one of my favorites so bad that it's good movies, but that score is just one of my favorite scores of all time. And I think it would surprise a lot of people to know that those are the guys that did the Africa song.
Before we get into rock songs and how they work in movies, do you think that there are certain instruments that are used in scores that immediately tell you what type of movie it is? Like, as soon as you hear a theremin, doesn't that immediately kind of go to a 50s-style throwback, kind of fun sci-fi movie? Like, does not a theremin immediately make it a sci-fi movie in your head, whether it should or not? I mean, are there certain instruments or certain types of scores that immediately tag the movie for what it is? Like Basil Polidorus, it's immediately, you know, the Conan score is a fantasy movie, that type of film. Or James Horner, it's much more of an action-y type movie.
There are instruments that will definitely indicate what kind of a movie it is. And it goes back to the importance of using the right kind of music for the right kind of movie. I think when you hear like sort of like a synthy, when you hear a bit of synth in the soundtrack, that can indicate that it's maybe like a sleazy crime movie or a sci-fi movie, depending on how much of it is used. When you hear, at least for me, when I hear a saxophone or like solo guitaring, I know that I'm watching a 90s era action movie. Like, I know that I'm definitely watching
most likely a direct-to-video one.
Most like, yeah,
Lethal Weapon.
Either a direct-to-video movie or like Hard to Kill or Out for Justice or something like that.
Like a Shane Black movie.
Yeah, you know that. Yeah, you're watching something like that. So I think it. Yeah, instruments are the types of instruments used. It can definitely indicate not only the type of movie you're watching, but depending on the movie and the composer, what era it's from. Because for me, saxophone usually will indicate sleazy 90s action glory.
Either there's some action going on,
or there's some action going on.
Yeah. So yeah, like there's the saxophone stingers from Lethal Weapon, and then just all I hear is fuck the opening from Careless Whisper. You know, just over every balls deep Red Shoe Diaries episode. It certain scores just have that feel where it fits, and it does take you back to a certain time frame. You listen to it and it evokes those feelings. I think now though it's a little bit different, because we're getting so many more people in the industry that have grown up listening to that stuff, and now they're putting retro scores in. So we're getting current movies that have scores and soundtracks that feel more like the 80s. Like I just recently saw a movie that was outstanding called The Guest. Yes. And The Guest was so good, but the score or the soundtrack for that had this weird 80s tinge to it that absolutely worked. I freaking loved it.
Now, to go back to something we said before, I thought of another band that I would not have pegged a soundtrack from. The soundtrack to Live and Die in LA was done by Wang Chung.
Oh my God.
Who the hell would have thought that, huh? Cecil, I know you love that movie. Can you hear any Wang Chung in that soundtrack?
You cannot hear any Everybody Have Fun Tonight. Everybody Wang Chung Tonight.
Yeah.
You cannot hear Wang Chung at all in there. And that's great, you know? It's funny when that kind of stuff happens.
Now, let's talk about rock music. When rock music is, we're not talking about the licensing and all that, but like when you hear a rock song, whether, especially if you hear it maybe for the first time in a movie, does that taint how you hear it? Like if you hear it on the radio later, the 80s and 90s were real big about having a rock video tie-in. If it was a studio film, they were trying to have a rock song that they could also have on MTV as a tie-in. Does the movie tie in with the rock song, or does the rock song tie in with the movie? Because, for instance, like I love Inagata DeVita by Iron Butterfly, but I can never hear that song on the radio without thinking of how masterfully it was used at the end of Manhunter. Manhunter made that song so much creepier than it already was. So which direction does it go for you when you have a rock song in a movie? Does the music influence the movie for you, or does the movie influence the music when it comes to that song?
Oh, man, because there are a lot of bands that I discovered through movies, because I didn't grow up in the 80s. I grew up in the 90s, but I grew up watching a lot of 80s and 70s movies on VHS, so I would discover a lot of bands that way. Like I can't listen to Sammy Hagar's Winner Takes It All without picturing arm wrestling. I can't listen to Party Man by Prince without, you know, picturing Jack Nicholson defiling some artwork, or Dokken without picturing Nightmare 3.
Dream Warriors.
Yes.
Or if I listen to Alice Cooper, I either think of Friday the 13th Part 6 or Class of 1984. I don't know if I Am the Future was made for Class of 1984, but I completely associate it with that movie. So for me, a lot of them, Queen is one of the few where I knew about Queen before I knew about Highlander. But because I got so into Highlander, like there's no way that I can listen to a lot of Queen music. I mean, of course,
if you hear any of the Queen songs from that soundtrack on the radio, you just see Connor McLeod cutting Clancy Brown's head off, don't you?
Yeah, because a lot of the, like, Who Wants to Live Forever, Give Me the Prize, Princes of the Universe, I mean, those were obviously made for the movie. So it's kind of hard not to think about Christopher Lambert and the trench coat and the Masamune cutting some heads off, which I think is awesome. That one really tied it all in together so well. But for me, like, a lot of it is me hearing songs and being reminded of movies because of when I grew up and discovering a lot of bands through my favorite movies.
One of the rock stations around here plays You Could Be Mine by Guns N' Roses all the time. All I picture are all the scenes from Terminator 2.
Yeah,
because,
same.
Because that video came out before the movie. So I watched the hell out of that video in early 1991 before I saw Terminator 2.
Yeah, that's another case of a movie getting me into the band. Like, I didn't know what Guns N' Roses was until I saw Terminator 2, and then I got really into them. And again, I can't listen to You Could Be Mine, you know, without picturing Arnold on the motorcycle and shit like that.
I'm thinking when I'm watching Breakfast Club, I'm thinking of Don't You Forget About Me. Like, I mean, so whenever I hear that song, I immediately think of The Breakfast Club. Weird Science, of course, I think, you know, you automatically think of Weird Science. So there's a lot of songs where even if I hear the song before I see the movie, once I see the movie and it has the song in there, it's forever entwined. Like, I'm always thinking of this song. Even if there's a song that's been around for a while and then it gets put into the soundtrack.
Oh, especially, absolutely. Well, like, I think an example of that for me would be Night of the Demons. When Bauhaus's Stigmata Martyr starts playing, that's the first time I ever heard that song by Bauhaus, which was a couple of years old at that point. Now, whenever I hear Stigmata Martyr, I picture Angela dancing around and then biting Stooge's nose off. You know, so sometimes the things are intrinsically tied together. Or, again, with Bauhaus, Bela Lugosi's Dead. I cannot see that without picturing The Hunger.
At the end of The Devil's Rejects, in its entirety.
They don't play the entire Freebird because once the guitar solo comes out, it kind of fades and they go and the score comes up over the credits. But Freebird is so is Midnight Rider, the escape at the beginning for the credits. That movie has such a gorgeous use of its soundtrack.
And yeah, fooled around and fell in love when they're doing the slow fades and the pans and like Baby just getting like messed up. Like it's so like, yeah, that had, I mean, of course, Rob Zombie is going to know how to put music into his movies. I think that kind of is where he peaked. I liked House of a Thousand Corpses, but I loved Devil's Rejects.
Yeah.
And I wanted to like Lords of Salem, but it flopped for me.
where Rob Zombie really screwed up with the music was he was just taking, by the time he got to the Halloween remakes, he was just taking songs he liked and putting them in the movie, whether they fit or not.
Turning into a very Quentin Tarantino kind
of
thing.
That ending over Love Hurts does not work at all. Yeah. I like Love Hurts. I even like that version of it because it's a cover. It's not the original. But holy shit, does that not work for that movie?
I could see it like on paper. It like, all right, that would, you know, that would be cool. But then like, yeah, in execution, it just doesn't work. And maybe unfortunately he might have already paid for the rights for it at that point or whatever. Or maybe I would guess that he thought it worked. But yeah, unfortunately, sometimes it just doesn't work.
When it comes to especially rock songs, do you think the soundtrack is as important as the movie? Because especially going back to, like I said, the 80s and 90s, major movies, they all had the rock video tie-in and the soundtrack. And in some cases, they found that the soundtrack made more money. I mean, selling it on CD and cassette made more money for the company than the movie did in ticket sales. So do you think when it comes to not the score, but picking the right rock soundtrack for your movie, which is now a rights nightmare, but in the 80s and 90s it was easier, is finding the right rock score as important as how the movie is cut or the direction?
I think a good example of a soundtrack being just eons better than the movie, the Spawn movie from the 90s, I think, is objectively a piece of shit. But that's a soundtrack that I still listen to this day. It had a lot of stuff that to me still holds up to this day. But the movie is just horrible. Yet you can go back and listen to the soundtrack. I think a lot of people are saying that about Batman Forever. And just it's just so many of these 90s movies that came out that to a lot of people were just complete bomb. But had all these really great songs on them. So yeah, I think it does totally make sense that, you know, before the whole copyright fiasco of today
with Spawn, this soundtrack is absolutely better than the movie. I think the movie, there's a lot of history that goes along with it as to why it ended up the way that it did. You had a freaking theater or whatever the studio was, like they had all these rules, like they couldn't say imply that he went to hell or they would immediately get an R rating. And all these like nonsensical rules and stuff to get them, you know, to an R rating or to a PG-13 rating. And one that actually came to me, this is a case of the movie being cool, but the soundtrack being better, was Rock and Roll, the animated one.
Oh, with, my God. I love the soundtrack to Rock and Roll.
Soundtrack for that is so good.
It was never released. They never released a soundtrack because the movie bombed so hard that almost all the songs that were written for Rock and Rule were just released by the individual bands. Like Blondie ended up releasing a couple of her songs as B-sides. Lou Reed took his. Iggy Pop took his. Earth, Wind, and Fire took theirs. There never was a Rock and Rule soundtrack. And that sucks because it's so good.
It's so good. And that's the thing. The movie itself is cool. But it's like the soundtrack is just memorable. The soundtrack you remember like beyond the film. And it does help to elevate it a little bit higher because the soundtrack is so good. But yeah, that's ridiculous. But it's a shame how it just completely flopped. Well, I mean, it was a more mature animated film, which is kind of what we were getting
Canada,
at the time.
So it wasn't even an American film.
Yeah, it wasn't even an American film. And it didn't go over well at the time. It since found its audience, but it took, you know, a few decades.
Well, but then, like, with animated films, look at, like, Heavy Metal. The soundtrack is the reason that that movie stayed off home video until 1996. They were able to sell the soundtrack as records and cassettes and CDs. They didn't have the licensing rights to put it on video. You could buy the soundtrack, and you could watch the movie on cable, but that soundtrack was what was keeping it off home video. That's just f***ing idiotic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Stupid business.
A rock soundtrack is just as important as a score. And sometimes people get those confused. Like with heavy metal, when people think of that, they think of Journey and Black Sabbath and whatnot. They don't think of Elmer Bernstein and that gorgeous score that connects all of the rock songs together. Music is so integral to enjoying movies that it's almost criminal to think of how little respect the composer gets, or even just the arranger, the person who figures out, you know what, this rock song from the 70s works perfect over this action scene or whatnot. That it's not just going, put that there. In a lot of cases, they edit the song or they edit the movie to fit the song. You lose that nowadays. Nowadays, it seems like it's just plunk, 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 you know?
It's a lost art. I've seen a lot of the movies that I see lately. I'm rather disappointed by the scores that I hear in them, because I find them to be boring. And I think it's just a lot of it is just booming noises. What's the guy's name? I think Steve Jablonski or something is the guy that's doing a lot of the music nowadays. He did like the Friday the 13th reboot and the Nightmare reboot and. I think he did like the new Rambo and stuff like that. And just, he does really generic sounding stuff other than Pain and Gain, which was surprisingly good. A lot of them just kind of sound the same. I don't think anybody really stands out nowadays. It's kind of hard to hear somebody like a James Horner, a Jerry Goldsmith, a Brad Fiedel, somebody who made something as epic and as memorable as the Terminator theme. I think a lot of it sounds like I don't know how Hans Zimmer can go from something as so epic sounding from even like Black Rain or even like The Rock to and this is just my personal opinion. I think the scores in the Batman movies are f***ing boring. Independent artists are coming out of the woodwork. Guys like Perturbator, guys like Kavinsky, all these synth artists that are very inspired by the works of Tangerine Dream, John Carpenter, Alan Howarth, they're really going to be the saviors of the scores in movies. Like if you watch movies like It Follows, The Guest, stuff like that, their scores are so much more memorable than the stuff that you're hearing in blockbusters nowadays.
I would like to give a shout out to a friend of the show here. Dustin Kidd's Mr. 45 is such a beautiful throwback to that John Carpenter style of synth score.
I could really see him doing music for movies by far. Like he should. Yeah. Who's the guy? I think the guy who did The Guest was I don't know if it was it Adam Wingard?
Yeah, it was Adam Wingard.
Yeah, like he could. That guy is using a lot of artists from stuff like that are making the music for games like Hotline Miami. That's how he got, guys like Perturbator into the score for The Guest and stuff. I'm assuming because the track he used was from Hotline Miami. I think guys like Dustin Kidd could really be used and utilized in movies nowadays, because a lot of the filmmakers, the independent filmmakers that have making music like that.
Look up, I think he's on SoundCloud as Mr. 45. And I think you guys, if you like John Carpenter's stuff, you'll like Dustin Kidd's stuff.
I just want to throw in with a similar thing. I don't think I've gushed about it on the show, but I know I've gushed about it elsewhere. The movie It Follows, on top of being easily the best film of the year, better than Fury Road, in my humble opinion, it also had a score from a guy who calls himself Disaster Piece. And the score heavily invokes a John Carpenter feel, but not ripping him off. It has an influenced by, but it still feels like its own thing. And it is the only way I could describe it is iconic. Like, when this is one of those movies and scores that 20 years from now, people are going to be talking about it, like how people talk about Halloween and Nightmare on Elm Street now. You know, it's that, oh my God, this movie is so influential, and talk about how amazing the score was to go along with it. On top of being an incredible film, the soundtrack is so freaking good, and it fits it to a T. And that is something that takes an excellent movie and then just makes it legendary. So, yeah, it's that good. Going to the topic, the soundtracks are very important. A movie can survive a bad soundtrack, but it does kind of take away from it. And it definitely can make a movie better if it can, it's tough. I mean, if it can make it worse, because sometimes there are those soundtracks that are just boring. And I don't remember what movie I was watching recently, but oh my God, it was, and it wasn't Inception, but it was just so, like, every other scene was blah, blah. And I'm like, oh God, stop. It was so bad. I've blocked it out. I can't remember what movie it was. It was something from last year, and I was just irritated, because that's a case of where, okay, you're taking something that is currently trendy and using it to death and to the detriment of the film. And so that's when soundtracks and scores do start to negatively impact the movie. So it can go either way. It can elevate it to something else, can make it all right, passable, because they just got whatever score in there, whatever soundtrack, or it can make it worse when they do shit like that.
And see, I look at it as the composer is just as integral to this, to the success of a movie, as the writer, as the director, as a cinematographer, and as the cast. I think they are part of the main production necessary for a movie, and yet they're so often overlooked. For instance, just talking about soundtracks, like on CD or on vinyl, everybody would go out and buy the rock soundtrack. How many people would go out and buy the score? Because a lot of those movies also had the score released, and they would sell maybe an eighth or a sixth of what the rock score would do. I think the composer is criminally overlooked when it comes to the success of a movie. And that's why James Horner dying at only 61, I think he probably had a lot of great scores left in him. Peter, as you get played out, where would people see you?
You can see me. You can, while hearing Dan Hill's It's a Long Road, you can depressingly make your way to Twitter, where I can be found at Zinematica. Facebook, The Cinemasochist, YouTube, The Cinemasochist, and I'm also located on 1201beyond.com.
Cecil, what song plays you in? What is your entrance music?
You can drive around the neighborhood listening to Night Call from Kavinsky, looking like a badass Ryan Gosling, and go to escapistmagazine.com, goodbadflix.com, geekjuicemedia.com. You can look me up on the YouTubes and all the other places. Give me money.
If you listen to the lyrics of the song, theme song Radioactive Dreams by Sue Sad, I would say that is my theme song. Get me out of this wasteland. So you can find me at 1201beyond.com. You can contact the show at 1201beyond@gmail.com. Make sure you go to 1201beyond.com. Buy some t-shirts, guys. Help support the show. You can also read my column in Fangoria Magazine, VHS, every month, where I look at movies that you cannot find on DVD. Have a good night, guys.
aren't you lost, alone? The power of the planet strikes deep within you and shakes the life of everything you've known. Restless hearts wishing to find something to hang on to. In a world of confusion where there's no place to hide. Feel the madness is stirring within you. A cry of the universe inside your mind.
Radio Drone is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.